This is Maine calling, and I'm Jennifer Rooks. The need for blood never ends. It's used in emergencies and in everyday surgeries. And this summer, the American Red Cross says it is experiencing one of its worst shortages in history. Today, we'll discuss the process for donating blood and how it's used. Joining us, Dr. Jorge Rios, who is medical director for the American Red Cross of Northern New England. We invite you to join the conversation. Have you ever donated blood? Have you been on the receiving end of a blood donation? Do you have a question about the system? You can send us a brief email, talk@mainpublic.org, post a comment on social media, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. And just a reminder that our main calling phone number is different than the one for Maine Public membership drive. The main calling number to talk about blood donation, 1-800-399-3566. Dr. Rios, welcome back to Maine Calling. You know, we hear from time to time that there's a shortage and that the Red Cross is asking people to donate. How is this time different?
This year is very different. We have a 25% reduction in the inventory since middle of July, and it became much more worse recently. So basically, we're appealing to anybody who can give blood to consider giving one unit of blood, because blood is not made in a lab. It comes from the vein of a donor to the vein of a patient.
Why do we think, why this 25% reduction? My understanding is the last time this happened was 2022, when we were in the middle of the pandemic. What's going on now?
Well, it could be the weather, but I think primarily it's kind of summer events. People are not going to, kids are not going to school or colleges. People take off to be with their families. People are traveling. And I believe that donors are forgetting that we need blood donors each and every day. Every 2 seconds, somebody needs a transfusion in the U.S.
But we don't know in particular why this summer compared to other summers were so much lower.
I cannot pinpoint a particular reason. We see this across the nation, so it's nothing peculiar to Maine or the Northeast, but the need is very severe.
I'm wondering, this news came out a couple weeks ago, so I'm wondering, in that time since, have you seen a surge in donations? Are we doing a little better?
Yes, indeed. We're seeing some good donor response, but the effort has to be sustained. Remember, you give blood on a Monday, your components from the blood donation will be ready maybe Wednesday or Thursday. So we need to collect blood every day of the week and platelets. So we need a sustained response to get back to the ideal inventory and don't be limiting transfusions in patients at various hospitals.
If you give blood on Monday, it'll be ready by Wednesday or Thursday. How long is that blood able to be in storage? How long can it be used?
From the typical donation whole blood, we could make red cells. Those will last 42 days. The plasma could be kept frozen, so it could last a year and could be thawed as needed. And then the platelets that are used to treat patients with cancer, for example, they only last 5 days, and we release them by day two. So platelets, we need platelet donors each and every day of the week, including Saturdays, Sundays, and holidays, because their lifespan is fairly short. It's not 42 days like red cells. It's only 5 days.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. You're talking about different kind of donations. If someone signs up for a blood drive and hasn't done so before, and they're asked these questions about what kind of donation, what are the differences and what should people know?
Well, the most common donation is a whole blood donation. It's everything in circulation, the red cells, the plasma. And that's done at the community across Maine. And we have donor centers in Bangor, Auburn, and Portland. So the so-called Red Cross donor centers. That would take maybe an hour from beginning to end. The proper blood draw would be like 7 to 14 minutes. And that's really a manual process. To give platelets is done by automation, by apheresis. Again, it would have to be done at our donor centers, the one I mentioned before, Bangor, Maine, Auburn, and Portland, usually by appointment. That's a longer process, takes maybe an hour and a half from beginning to end. And at the end, we get maybe 2 units of platelets for a patient or even 3 units. So there's manual donations, automated donations, some of them in the community, the bulk of them. Some of them are the donor centers, and the manual donations take less than an hour. The automated, maybe an hour and a half, but we need all kind of donors each and every day of the year.
You said, I just want to make this clear. If you haven't signed up before and it would be your first time, what you can expect for a whole blood donation, 2 hours from beginning to end, and that includes filling out the paperwork, speaking with people, talking about the process. But the actual needle in the arm is 7 to 14 minutes.
Yeah, it's only 1 hour. So the
Oh,
hour and a
excuse me,
half
one
is
hour. Okay.
for
So
the
plan
automated.
an hour out of your day.
Right. So we like appointments, so we bring the right number of staff members and know bring the right amount of supplies. So you could register online and go through the questions the day of the blood drive after midnight. So that will expedite the process. That's called Rapid Pass, and we have an application for that. Then you come to the donor center, you have to do some required readings from the government. And then we proceed to do a mini physical exam. So what's a mini physical exam? We'll measure your blood pressure, your heart rate, your temperature, and your hemoglobin to make sure you're safe to be a blood donor. If the blood pressure is very high, we tell the donor, the person won't be able to give, we tell them come maybe the next day. So after the person passes the mini physical exam, we have to go through a series of questions required by the federal government regarding issues that pertain to safety of the donors and safety of the patient getting the transfusions. That will take maybe 8 minutes. If you pre-fill the questions online, it would shorten the process. And then we do the proper phlebotomy or collection. For a regular donation, the most common donation, the one done in the community, it's 7 to 14 minutes, having the needle in your vein. It hurts a little at the beginning, but at the end, not too much pain. And then we ask donors to go to the canteen, eat some cookies and drink some water, and they could go home. So from beginning to end, it's usually an hour. The other type of donation, the automated donation, the one for platelets, that takes longer. The process is the same. You have to do some reading. You have to go through the mini physical exam. The collection is done with a machine. It's longer, as I mentioned before. And at the end, we ask the donors, please stay in the canteen so you could relax and then you could go home. And we like donors to make appointments because I would make sure there's no delays and we have the right number of people and the right number of supplies and bags. So it takes an hour for the most common donation, an hour and a half for the automated donation of platelets.
I have a note here from our producer, Jonathan Smith, Dr. Rios. He is a regular donor, and he wanted me to mention that there is no more finger prick. So if people don't like to have their fingers pricked, that's not part of the process anymore, correct?
Yes, we've started using a non-invasive device to measure hemoglobin. So no finger prick at the beginning. It's only the needle stick for the collection of the whole blood or the platelet. So it's one less mini needle stick, put it this way, or finger prick to make it easy for the donor. So that's the physical findings. It's more automated and more simpler for the patient, for the donors.
I'm going to go to Jamie, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Jamie, go ahead.
Oh, hi, Jennifer. Thank you for taking my call. Hey, I'm pretty sure it worked this way because I was a semi-regular donor, but I had my knee replaced back, I don't know, like it's been 4 years now, and I know I think there was a window where I wasn't supposed to give, but I should get back on and start giving. So, but just the exceptions and reasons for getting back involved in this case, a knee operation. Do I have to call my physician first, or because it's been 4 years, so at least so.
It should be able to give Jamie. For a surgery, we only ask donors to recover from the surgery and be feeling well. And we ask all donors to be feeling well. So if you recover from the surgery, maybe you've seen the doctor for the last time, maybe 4 years ago, you're welcome to become a blood donor again. So in principle, donors have to be feeling well before, giving blood. And we have a question about that. That's question number one. But other than that, the requirements are very minimal, a weight of 110 pounds. Age 16 with parental consent, 17 without parental consent, and there's no upper age limit. So come back to us and give us a unit of blood to save lives.
An email here from Mary. I live near Holton, and recently the Red Cross stopped the bi-monthly donation drives there, and I think other places as well. I think the reasons were financial, but it seems counterproductive. I'm happy to give and have in the past, but I need a place to do it. Dr. Rios.
Well, we have some blood drives in these towns, south of the Bangor area, kind of in the media Bangor area. For economics to be more cost effective, we stopped collecting the community. We understand that we kept the donor center across from the airport in Bangor, so it might require some more travel. But even if you do it once a year, I know it could be more challenging not having a community blood drive in your town. If you do it once a year, that will make a difference in the life of a patient. So it's for economics. We want conscientious about the cost of collecting blood and so forth. But the donor center in Bangor is still open with expanded hours, even during the weekends, for whole blood donations.
Maybe, Dr. Rios, this is why donations are down now, though. If this is happening across the country, if more rural locations are not available as often, maybe there are fewer people able to give.
Well, the situation in Bangor is rather unique. We expanded and opened more donor centers across the nation. There's one brand new in Amherst, New Hampshire. So that was an isolated situation. On the other hand, the percentage of people from rural communities that give is higher than in urban centers. So people in Maine, Vermont, and New Hampshire are very generous, more than city dwellers like Bostonians. I hate to say that. So we need everybody, but recognize the generosity of people in smaller cities and towns, with giving blood. It's kind
I
of the
think
main
it.
event in some towns, kind of the social event, and we acknowledge their generosity and appreciate their
Well, let me
commitment.
ask you that question. I'm not surprised to hear that people in Maine are generous and that they give blood more than maybe people in other places. Is the blood that's donated in Maine and Northern New England, does it stay in Maine and Northern New England, or is that not how the system works?
The lab to process the blood donations is located where I work in Dedham, Massachusetts. And we mix the entire inventory from Maine, Vermont, and New Hampshire, Massachusetts. So, and it will go to whoever wants it. Say, for example, Maine wants more O negative red cells. The donor could come from anywhere. So we're a national system. We service the hospital locally first, but we mix all the inventory together. It's very difficult to sort them by states. And whoever needs it first, and if there's something peculiar about that donor, it will go to that hospital in Maine or across the nation.
Christy on Facebook writes, I've donated over 7 gallons. The Red Cross has a great app that keeps track of w donations, which is fun. So, Christy, wow, 7 gallons? That's a lot of
Good.
blood. Tell us about this app, Dr. Rios.
So we have an app called the Blood Donor app for the two systems that you could download to your cell phone. You can make an appointment. You could see your vital signs, track and trend them. You could see your blood pressure, your hemoglobin. If you get platelets, you could see your platelet count. You could make an appointment to give blood, and you could see where your donation went to. So it has multiple purposes. It's very easy to use, and you get your own health data. You could track your blood pressure and hemoglobin across time. And you could even see who you help, which hospitals you help. So it's very good. It's implemented maybe 6 years ago, and then donors do enjoy it. And they could also do the questions the day of the blood drive, in the app, and we'll get that information at the blood drive. So it's very useful. I recommend anybody who wants to be a blood donor or who is a blood donor to use the app. They could also call 1-800 Red Cross to make an appointment or go to our web page. So using the app is not necessary, but it's convenient.
Well, we're going to go to a quick break, but we are talking about blood donation on Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
Maine Calling, a program you've no doubt come to depend on as part of your daily schedule, part of your daily listening habit. Hi, I'm Keith Shortall, senior editor here at Maine Public, and I'm here with my colleague Scott Marshallton. What's your title? Exchequer or no.
Bag holder.
Bag holder, chief development officer, man of many skills. We're taking just a few minutes out of this Maine Calling on this first day of our summer fundraising drive, and you've been listening to the discussion about the urgent blood supply situation in Maine and the call for donations. And Scott, there's an obvious parallel
There certainly is.
here about making an ask of a community to come together and answer the call to help your neighbors and to help in matters of public health and in matters of public broadcasting, in this case, to do your part. 1-800-866-1475 or mainpublic.org.
Lovely segue, Keith, into our summer fundraising drive, where we're asking you, our listener, our listening audience, to call in or to go online and share your support with Maine Public Radio. You can call 1-800-866-1475 or again, go online at mainpublic.org and be as generous as you can be. We are in our second year after losing federal funding. That was 12% of our overall budget, $2.5 million. We made it through last year because of you, our listeners. When you called in during pledge drives just like this, you shared your support. We're asking you to do that again. We've recalibrated our budget. We've done a lot of things here at Maine Public, but what we haven't done, Keith, is we haven't slowed down in terms of journalism. We continue to invest in journalism. We continue to invest in programs like this and Maine Calling. Nothing is needed more right now than a statewide conversation on this important matter, and it's you, our listeners, that make that possible.
1-800-866-1475. You know, we started Maine Calling, I think it's probably, 15 years ago. I should know this exactly, but 15 years ago, and I can tell you that the news cycle was not what it is now. For Maine Calling, for our news team, it's a 24/7 news cycle, and we have stepped to that, and we continue to need your support to make that, to keep that happening at this time. It's really important. 1-800-866-1475 or at maincalling.org.
And I think that's what our audience, Keith, expects. They expect a news organization like Maine Public News, Maine Public Journalism, to be able to cover things that are mattering, that matter today, that are important today. I know from your perspective at Maine Calling, you have a long list of programs and shows that you're getting ready for, that you're preparing, that you're writing material for, that you're editing material for. And then something like the Biddeford shooting happens, and Maine is at the epicenter of all news across the country. We've got to pivot our whole team. You all did that in the newsroom very seamlessly because of donor support, because people care about what's going on here at Maine Public, and they care about making it possible. Won't you join one of those folks when you call 1-800-866-1475? Again, you can go online at mainpublic.org. And let's get back to Maine Calling.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we're discussing blood donation and the many ways that blood is used in medical treatment. My guest, Dr. Jorge Rios with the American Red Cross of Northern New England. Share your comments and questions. Are you hesitant to give blood? Ask Dr. Rios why. Why to respond to whatever your concern is. And what are your questions about how donations work? You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. A quick note here, before the break, we were talking about the app, and Jonathan, our producer, says, my favorite part of the app is to see the journey my donation takes. It tracks from donation to processing, to testing, to storage and completion, which tells you where and which hospital your donation ends up at. So there you go. Another person advocating for your app, Dr. Rios. We're going to go to Lynn calling from Blue Hill. Hi, Lynn. Go ahead.
Hi. I have a question. My blood type is AB positive. And I know that I am the universal receiver. I can take anybody's blood, but I don't think many people can take my blood. So is it worthwhile me donating?
It is, Jennifer, because your plasma, the plasma from somebody who's AB, is a universal plasma. So you're the universal receiver, but your plasma is a universal plasma. So we use your plasma and give it to hospitals for emergencies when they don't know the blood type of the patient, sometimes for ambulance transfusions. And so that's very convenient. You could also get platelets at the donor centers that I mentioned before, Auburn, Portland. And in conjunction with giving platelets, you could also give a little bit of plasma. Again, it's a universal plasma, so you're the universal receiver. But most importantly, the universal plasma donor. So it's like gold, you know, in transfusion, you know, in the transfusion mindset.
So if Lynn were to give, you would recommend that she tell the donation center that she's going to donate plasma?
Well, if she's going to come to the donation centers, if she makes the appointment, If we don't know her blood type, that could trigger the staff to collect plasma. But if she has given blood in the past, it'd be in the computer system, so we'll know to collect plasma with her permission in conjunction with platelets. So we'll know if she has given blood in the past. If not, she could mention that at the time of making the appointment by a phone call in this case.
Why is it, Dr. Rios, that some blood types are more in demand than others?
Well, the O blood type is a universal blood type. We've got the A blood type, the B blood type, the AB like lean, and the O. So the O red cells, the cells that carry oxygen, don't have any so-called proteins or antigens, A or B. So they could be used to and given to anybody. If you don't know the blood of a patient, you could give them O. If they are O, they're going to need O red cells. So that's the component, the blood type for a red cell component. That is highest demand in terms of red cells. Again, if you look at the kind of the contrary to this, the plasma from a patient a donor who is AB doesn't lack any of the anti-A or anti-B antibodies. I'm being very technical here, but that could be given to anybody. So for red cells, always a universal blood type. For plasma, AB. It's all genetics, the way the body is designed. Nobody knows the exact reason. And there's difference in blood types, O being the more common, AB the least common. But again, we need all blood types, all blood donors. We need A donors, B donors, sometimes are in shortage, and B red cells. So we need everybody, but again, O for red cells, it's very convenient, and AB for plasma and platelets.
And Dr. Rios, a lot of people don't know their blood type. Do you need to know your blood type before you give blood?
No, we perform that test in conjunction with the other tests. You're going to see in the app or on the web page your blood type within maybe 2 days after giving blood. So you don't need to know your blood type. No, that's not needed.
Lynn, thank you for your call. We'll go to Liberty and Heidi. Hi, Heidi. Go ahead.
Yes, I have two questions. The first, I'm a diabetic too. Am I able to donate blood?
Yes, you can. You could be giving blood with diabetes. Yes.
Okay. And then the second is when I was in high school, we used to have blood drives at the high school. Do they do that anymore? 'Cause, and how old do you have to be to donate blood?
So the minimum age is 16 with parental consent. In Maine, 17 without parental consent. The issue with the high school is that there's more educational standards across the nation. So our access to certain high schools is more limited in terms of hours. The principal and the teacher want the kids to be in school taking classes. So we cut down in a certain manner high school blood drives. And move to the community. So anybody of any age bracket could be a blood donor. Again, access to school is, I think education is more highly sort of more highly controlled in this manner. Kids have to be sitting in school and attending to the teacher. So we change the way we operate. We still have some high school blood drive, but it's much more less, especially after COVID. When there was some online learning and no high schools, getting back to that swing, it's having a bit challenging.
Heidi, I too remember high school blood drives, and I remember working on them, Dr. Rios. And it was always the bigger and the tougher the guy was, the most likely he more likely he
Perfect.
was to pass out, right? And
Correct. Yes,
I
in
think back then you had to be 110 pounds to give, and it was the person who was 111 pounds who did just great.
Indeed, well, the minimum weight is 110 pounds, but indeed, some of the tougher looking, I would say, men, are the ones who faint the most, and most of the sturdier donors are female donors. But kids are very generous, they want to help. It's a good way to get them into a volunteer activity, and they are very engaged. So they do, contribute to the blood inventory. It's a good way to start and to continue working or in college or in the military. But again, the number of high school blood drives is a lot less, especially after COVID and school access issues. It's been a little bit of a challenge.
Heidi, thank you for your question. Dr. Rios, you'd mentioned that for a whole blood donation, it's about an hour of your day. Should someone schedule it around other activities? For example, should you keep and maybe not do something physical afterwards, not go on a run or work in your garden, or does that really not matter?
It matters to a certain extent. So basically, you can come to be working before and after or going to school, but After giving blood, you really have to rest, take it easy for the next 24 hours, which means no running, no heavy duty exercise. So you want to go home or go back to the office or school and rest for a while, drink fluids and so forth. You should be able to resume your activities the next day. In terms of the weather, if it's very hot outside, come and give blood. The setting will be air conditioned. But again, go back home, maybe forget about the gardening until late at night. So you could adjust to losing a certain amount of blood, but you'll be okay the next day.
And regular activities, standing in the kitchen and cooking, or maybe meeting some friends or something like that, that's all
That's
fine.
fine, yes. We also want people to have sufficient time. Sometimes we're in a rush and we multitask and schedule one appointment after the other. So take it easy afterwards. You want to meet a friend, give it extra time to get there, or don't plan to have, four meetings right after. And you get to relax a little bit more after giving blood, but you'll be fine.
And how long does it take for your body to replenish the blood that you've donated?
It's about 16 weeks. If you give whole blood or red cells by apheresis, we call them powered reds, it will take like 16 weeks for, after one donation. We tell frequent donors to take iron pills in consultation with their doctors, but the hemoglobin, the test that we do to measure the capacity of the body to carry oxygen, that will go back to the pre-donation level within maybe 16 weeks.
We're joined now by Dr. Brian Morse, who is Trauma Medical Director with Maine Health. Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Morse. Can you hear me?
Yes. Thanks, Jennifer.
Is it terrific? I want to ask you if you can tell us the ways in which blood is used in hospitals. I think a lot of people probably understand if there's been a traffic accident or some sort of accident with a chainsaw or something. People can understand why people have lost blood, but there are many other reasons, correct?
Absolutely. First of all, thank you for having me. This is a very important topic, especially to us in trauma at Maine Medical Center. The basically we have to have it have to have this life-saving resource really, and it's used across the entire hospital system. We use it, as you mentioned, not only for trauma and the when there's critical injuries. It's also used in cardiac surgeries, in any sort of operative setting. Is used a lot in obstetrics and labor and delivery. So people that have children, if there's bleeding. It's also used a lot in cancer patients who have different who have different depletion or have depletion of different types of blood products, whether it's red blood cells, platelets, or plasma, or things along those lines. So.
Yeah. How much, I know it's probably different every day, but how much blood will a major hospital like Maine Medical Center go through in a day?
We keep pretty close track of that with our blood bank, and it really varies anywhere from 10 to 20 units up to it could be as much as a couple hundred units of blood a day, just depending on what we have going on.
Wow. To support what you've been saying, Nina on Facebook writes, "I received multiple blood transfusions on October 19th, 2018, and they saved my life." Another message on Facebook, "Fortunately, I have not needed to receive blood yet. Myself and my daughters have a genetic condition where we could potentially hemorrhage, typically as nosebleeds, but possibly other ways. It's called hereditary hemorrhagic telangiectasia. You say it, Dr. Morse."
Telangiectasia.
Good. And it's more common than you'd think. So this messenger says, "Thank you to all who donate." We're going to go to Lori, who's calling from Chelsea. Hi, Lori. Go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I lived in England in the mid-1980s. That was when they were starting to be worried about, I think it's called Creutzfeldt-Jakob. It was a mad cow disease. And I first started donating blood from 1997. I did for several years while I worked at American Red Cross Blood Services in Tucson. And then several years later, I heard about the deferral. And I said, so now I'm on a permanent deferral from donating blood. And I wondered if that was still in effect. And the other thing that I had was I had been on the organ donor list and thinking that if that was still in effect, that I should remove myself from the organ donor list as well.
Okay, so you lived in England. You did not contract mad cow disease, but you lived there.
Right. As far as I know, I don't have mad cow disease.
Yeah. Okay, so Dr. Yeah. Rios, is that true? Anybody who's lived in England during a certain period of time cannot donate forever?
Not anymore. So basically, there was a fear that the human variant of mad cow disease could be transmitted from a blood transfusion. So there were some Food and Drug Administration mandated deferrals for living or traveling in the UK and rest of Europe. Those are gone by the wayside. They were eliminated maybe 4 years ago. So anybody who live in the UK or the rest of Europe or travel could be a blood donor in the US. We deleted those deferrals in the computer system. If you want to check, you can call 1-800 Red Cross and they will double check that the deferral was removed. So basically no more European travel deferrals for people that were in the UK, the military bases in North or South of Europe, and the rest of Europe. Those are gone 100% by the wayside. Because there wasn't any good evidence of transfusion-transmitted mad cow disease, and there were very few cases, and no cases in the U.S.
All right. Well, Lori, there you go. You can donate now. Some more messages about people who have received blood donations. Laura on Facebook writes, my daughter had an ulcer that bled when she was 11 months old and received a transfusion. You are all heroes. And Pat writes, I had open heart surgery when I was 5, and the staff in my dad's office were so moved and wanted to be supportive that they all went to give blood. It always felt like such a nice statement of support and generosity. So someone you know has surgery and you don't give blood regularly, it's an awfully nice thing to do. So do you hear that, Dr. Rios, very often that people have a personal reason for coming?
I think that's one of the most common reasons for giving blood, especially giving platelets. Donors of a relative or a family member who was ill and needed a transfusion. The family member hopefully recovered, and in honor of them, they want to continue giving to, you know, giving, doing something for society. And they give platelets specially, even 24 times per year, some of them, the maximum amount. So indeed, that's a very good reason that I found among blood donors. It's getting back to the society for the good gestures of blood donors who help, you know, in the treatment of their relative or family members.
Indeed. We are talking about the big blood shortage right now and how that blood is used. If you have a question, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
Maine Calling is supported by listener support. When you call 1-800-866-1475, or you can go online at mainepublic.org, hit that red donate button and invest in journalism in Maine, invest in Maine Public, invest in Maine Calling. Hi, I'm Scott Marshallden here with my colleague Keith Shortall. We're here just for a few minutes to thank all of you who have already called in or gone online and shared your support. Thank you for your support. It's important now more than ever before. And if you haven't made that call and you've been waiting for the opportunity to do that, now is the time, Keith.
Now is the time. 1-800-866-1475. We've been listening on the program today to this conversation about the need for blood. It's a serious public health situation that many of us probably take for granted. We assume we'll arrive at the emergency room and there'll be blood for us. But we're learning about how it takes constant effort to collect blood, and it all depends on the generosity of strangers, in a sense. And there's a parallel to what we're sort of asking, this constant support for something that is so vital to your life. 1-800-866-1475 or at mainepublic.org.
And we've got this pledge drive, and only this pledge drive. We've got a fantastic new sea bag offer, our 2026 Maine Public Sea Bag, limited edition, featuring this year artwork by Maine artist Alan Bray. What an amazing artist Alan is.
Yeah, it's a really cool bag. If you know what sea bags are, they're made from sailcloth, reused sailcloth. And the image on this one is really beautiful. It's, as you said, it's this image by Alan Bray. It's called Floating Larch. And it's inspired by the scene from Spencer Pond in Greenville. And you are looking back as if you're in a boat across the water at the shore, at this treescape and the beautiful colors of blue and green. It's a great sort of thank you for your support at $50 a month, as you said. There's also a clasp, a bag with a clasp that we will, to which we will say thank you for $60 a month as a Evergreen member. But it just a way to say thank you for the support. And if you haven't had a chance yet to show your support, now is a great time. 1-800-866-1475.
Again, 1-800-866-1475. If a new Maine Public Sea Bag is something that that you'd like to be a part of, please call us now and share your support, as Keith mentioned, for a one-time $600 gift or $50 a month, or with the clasp, a $60 a month gift or a $720. Be it as it may, what is most important right now is that you call and share your support, supporting Maine Calling, supporting Maine Public Journalism, supporting all the things going on right now. We have stayed true to our mission to report on facts, to continue to, no matter the chaos that is out there, to continue to do the work that matters for you, our listeners. We are here because of you. When you call 1-800-866-1475, you get to support that. And thank you.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today we're learning about the system for donating and receiving blood and what to know about the current shortage of blood. With me, Dr. Jorge Rios with the American Red Cross of Northern New England, and Dr. Brian Morse, a critical care surgeon at Maine Medical Center. We have a little bit of time. You can call 1-800-399-3566. Again, the number for Maine Calling, 1-800-399-3566. Dr. Morse, before the break, we were talking about people having personal reasons for giving. You have a personal reason as well, don't you?
Yes, I do. And I wanted to echo what Dr. Rios was saying. The reason I'm here, and actually the reason why my family is in Maine, is that my oldest child, had a rare bone marrow failure disease called aplastic anemia. And during the time that we were at Boston Children's Hospital, he received a number of blood transfusions because his bone marrow had failed. And, you know, it really requires a community effort, like Dr. Rios was saying, to support people. And I think Maine has a very strong community. And this is really a way to for people to get out and give back to the community and help make Maine stronger, and providing that life-saving resource that we need, that we can't manufacture but has to be on the shelf when people need it. And so that's why it's such a personal issue to me.
Yeah. I want to ask, you know, we're hearing about this critical shortage, second worst in history. What does that mean for the hospitals? Does that mean that surgeries get postponed, or, and could it possibly mean that someone will not survive a bad accident?
We're hoping, you know, we hope that it doesn't get to that point. Although, as you pointed out, we are in a critical shortage. I can tell you that when we have been short in the past, we have had to postpone different operations, to be able to get blood components to Maine Medical Center. We're not at the point where we're having to forestall operations now, but if this continues, it is very much a risk where people could need blood for either hemorrhage or a different medical process where they need transfusion and they can't get it, and it could be it could cost them their life. And so we want to try and avoid that. And that's why we're encouraging people to get out and donate.
And let me ask you this, Dr. Morse. I think both you and Dr. Rios have mentioned several times that this is something that cannot be manufactured, that it can only be donated. And I'm wondering, with all the medical advances out there, is there any promise that there could be some sort of substitute for human blood in the near future?
There have been efforts to make artificial blood, but they fail. You know, the body is so complex, such are the red cells and the plasma and the platelets, that it's difficult to replicate them in a lab. Some of the clotting factors for hemophiliacs are made in a lab, you know, in cell lines, but that's only, you know, for a certain patient population. But for the red cells and the plasma and the platelets, the most commonly used blood components, there's nothing artificial. It has to come from the vein of a healthy donor who's willing to save a life of a patient anywhere in the nation.
Yeah. Nothing artificial, and we're not close. Go ahead, Dr. Morse.
No, we've participated in several large research studies to trial different blood substitute products, and there's not been a widely marketable successful product yet.
We'll go to Ryan Burton, who's calling from Portland. Ryan, I understand you're a phlebotomist and a supervisor. What have you been seeing in the last few weeks?
Hi, yeah, I'm the Portland Center supervisor up in Maine. And we've been seeing a huge uptick in donors coming in the past few weeks. It's been really great to see people come out to really support what we've been having going on with the crisis. We were in a position where we weren't collecting amazingly at the beginning of the month in July, and we're really coming into a spot where we're collecting a lot more stably, but we still have bunch of work to do.
Well, let me ask you, I have so many messages coming in, but one of them, which I can't find right now, says that he tries to drink a whole lot of fluids before he goes in to donate blood. Is that a good idea? And also, are there other tips that you would give people?
Yeah, we always try to encourage donors to drink a lot of water. Usually, we say double whatever their normal consumption is, just to ensure that they're properly hydrated before they come in for their appointment, and really focusing on that 24 to 48-hour window before they come in. So that way, when they come in, they are actually hydrated. And then also eating really well before they come in as well. You don't want to treat it like a fasting lab. So make sure that your body is prepped to handle the experience as best as possible.
And I know a lot of people are afraid of giving blood. What would you say to people who are really nervous and anxious about the process?
We are all trained to really help make donors feel extremely comfortable while they're in. We're more than happy to talk, have someone come over and talk to you during your donation if we have the staffing to allow that. I definitely go over and I talk to donors all the time, especially when they're nervous, just to try to help have that friendly face. Plus, also, like in my fixed site, people bring in like a friend and they sit in the waiting area until it's time for them to donate, and then they might even like walk over once the donation has started to kind of help them through that process. So when you're feeling more comfortable and can get through that process successfully.
Ryan Burton, thank you so much for calling in and putting some of us at ease. Head phlebotomist and supervisor in the Portland office of the Red Cross. Before we go back to callers, and we have so many, we're not going to be able to get to everybody. And so I know Dr. Rios, people can call the Red Cross phone number with their questions if they can't get through today. But I wanted to ask you, I know that my grandfather used to give blood because he believed it was good for him. He felt like he was getting, a little bit of, his blood pressure read and some things like that. But there are physical reasons that giving blood can be beneficial, correct?
Not exactly. We do perform a mini physical exam and I find people that have high blood pressure, maybe a low hemoglobin, maybe an irregular pulse. But I think the main intent of giving blood is to save somebody altruistically. We know there's really no physical benefit for the blood donor per se. It's just the psychological knowledge that you're helping people, down the road. So that's the current thinking right now. In the past, there were some studies indicating that it could be beneficial. Those, were proven to be true. But basically, it's helping somebody else. You don't know who's going to get your blood, but with 1 hour, you could save, multiple lives.
We'll go to Lucia calling from Union. Hi, Lucia, go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I'm a retired RN. I've given blood for many years. I'm approaching 10 gallons. And I have for years been able to give power red, but I turned 80 in January and I was told that I can no longer give power red. And she didn't have a reason why. And so I wondered why that is the case.
So, Lucia, you, I want to have Dr. Rios explain the difference between Power Red and a regular donation. Were you told it was only Power Red you weren't allowed to do, but you're still allowed to donate whole blood cells?
That's correct.
Okay, Dr. Rios?
So a Power Red donation is giving 2 units of red cells only with a machine by so-called apheresis. It's done at the donor centers and at the community. We're taking twice the amount of red cells. The hemoglobin of the donor has to be higher. So for certain donors, we tell them maybe go back to the routine donation. We'll take less from you, but it'd be maybe safer for you down the road. So just a advice given to you, I hate to say this, maybe basically related to the age, to prevent you from losing too much hemoglobin and iron and becoming iron deficient or having a low hemoglobin that's called anemia. So a donor safety measure. Or expanding this type of collections in the other donors, we could maximize the donation. For somebody who's, say, O negative, the universal blood type, they could give 2 units on one appointment. They only have to come once to the Red Cross or to a blood drive, and they'll be able to help more people with only one appointment. So it depends on your blood type and your age, et cetera. But again, all donations of any kind are good for all the patients. We need everybody.
All right. And just to be clear, I know you've said this before, Dr. Rios, there is no upper age limit to giving blood, lower age limit of 16 with parental consent or 17 without parental consent, correct?
That's true, yes.
Okay, great. Lucia, thanks so much for calling in. We have several emails asking about giving blood without going through the Red Cross, people who have moved here from other places and have given directly to hospitals. Dr. Morse, is that something that happens in Maine? Can people give directly to Maine Health?
Not to my understanding, most if not all of our blood comes through the American Red Cross that we're contracted through. I've not seen where we've been taking blood donations directly. And I'll defer to Dr. Rios that the process for separating blood in its components is pretty complex, and I don't know that we necessarily have that here on site.
Maine Calling, one of the many things about public radio and how it inspires us to take action in our own lives to help others. Hi, I'm Keith Shortall, senior editor here at Maine Public, along with my colleague Scott Marshall, and taking just a few minutes out of the programming here on the first day of our summer fundraising drive to ask you for your support directly. Maine Calling is like that friend that calls you at 11 o'clock every day and you talk for an hour. And how would you, what would your day be like without it? Ask yourself that question, then answer it with your support for this program during this break. The number is 1-800-866-1475. You can also easily make a donation at our website at mainpublic.org.
Again, 1-800-866-1475. That is the number you can call to share your support with Maine Public. Support Maine Calling, an amazing show, a statewide conversation where we can get different opinions. We can hear the news of the day. We can hear important public service announcements like the one we're hearing today, and people are getting information on that. It's made possible only because of you, our listeners. When you call in during a drive like this, give us a call at 1-800-866-1475. It is an investment in journalism at Maine Public. It's an investment in independent journalism, something that's hard to come by these days, Keith, isn't it?
Look, we all know that in the same way that the news cycle has changed, it's now 24/7. And I was thinking about this, Scott. Sometimes I went on the internet the other day looking for recommendations on how to, what's the best, cooking thermometer for meat thermometer. I didn't have any idea whether I was looking at something that was,
right,
advertised or propped up or.
Right.
Maine Public is something that you don't have to look around. You know that this is a trusted news operation done by serious journalists. And I've been here for 35 years. I've witnessed it firsthand. You can trust it. And so you can take that to the bank and know that in this time of so much news and so much, really a fire hose of information and opinion, that you can come to Maine Public and know that you're getting the truth, or as close to the truth as journalists can possibly possibly get. 1-800-866-1475 or mainpublic.org.
I know my family, myself and my family, we appreciate the balanced approach Maine Public Journalism takes when it's covering issues, no matter how we feel about the issues. I want my news to be measured. I do not want an opinion. I don't want opinion telling me what to do, telling me how I should vote on an issue, telling me what candidate I should vote for. We don't do that at Maine Public because you, our listeners and our donors, wouldn't stand for it. You want independent journalism to be just that, free and independent.
If you hadn't noticed, there is this effort in the journalism world to sort of gin up emotion. Yeah. If you can stir emotion, negative emotion in particular, you're going to get more clicks. You're going to get a bigger audience. We're not in that game.
No.
We're here as a service to do, I guess, what we would all call old school journalism, which is collect the facts, do the best analysis you can based upon the sources that you have, and be the eyes and ears of people who are too busy all day to keep track of what's going on and what they need to pay attention to in order to be good citizens. Now is your chance to support this kind of journalism. The number 800-866-1475 or online, mainpublic.org.
And while we were on break, we had some people call in. We had Renee Johnson from York, Maine calling in. We had Robert Mooney from Westport Island, Maine. We had Susan Effingham from New Hampshire. Susan says, the thing that matters most is that the information is accurate and truthful, and I can trust it. Those are some things we were just talking about, Keith. Also, Lucinda Pine from Portland, Maine. We have people calling all over the state, New Hampshire, other places, sharing their support, being generous to Maine Public Radio. Won't you join them at 1-800-866-1475?
Lucinda Pine, thank you very much. Again, the number, 1-800-866-1475. The towers that we have are growing. We're reaching more and more of the state of Maine. That's the other part of this is accessibility. There's no firewall. We're broadcasting to more trees and fish than anyone else probably in the country. But we're also broadcasting to people in different parts of Maine and trying to reach them and bringing them all together as part of this community to inform and inspire them. And also ask for their support. The number 1-800-866-1475.